Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Monday, December 3rd, 2012. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. It's not just Sitka that struggles every year to allocate municipal funds to nonprofits. In Ketchikan, the City Council last week started its review of the 2013 proposed city budget. KRBD's Lila Carey has more.
In an effort to cut expenses, the Ketchikan City Council decided in a split vote to reduce funding for community nonprofit agencies from 4% of the city's sales tax revenue to 3.24%. Council members Sam Bergeron, Matt Olson, and Marty West opposed the move. Dick Coos, K.J. Harris, Deanne Carlson, and Bob Sievertson voted yes. The lower level was the original amount recommended, but the council boosted that to 4% during a previous meeting. Sievertson proposed the funding decrease, which he says will match the level in the city's 2012 budget.
I debated whether I should bring this forward or not, but I think it's the prudent thing to do at this particular point in time, given the financial situation of the city and the community.
Bergeron asked the council to wait before cutting funds to nonprofit groups.
This is one of the parts in the budget that are kind of near and dear to me, and I was wondering if I could encourage the council member to consider taking this up a little deeper into the budget and we get into some of the other things that we have a really good feel about where we're at in the budget. Maybe we can identify some other cuts within it before we start with this one.
Sievertson countered that it's not an official function of the city to fund agencies. He says that taxes and fees are going up, so the city shouldn't increase its contributions to nonprofit groups. Olson argues that reports show nonprofit agencies, including groups that promote the arts, support the economy, providing a good return on the city's investment. The cut brings community agency funding down to about $325,000. The entire budget calls for spending $84.3 million, which is $6.8 million more than 2012. Some of the increased costs come from voter-approved bond debt for the new fire station and library, as well as an expected 10% increase in health insurance premiums. To pay for some of the new costs, City Manager Carl Amelon has proposed a 1 mil property tax increase.
From the get-go, we decided we were going to present a status quo budget. Over the last 2 to 3 years, we've suggested various cuts, which the council didn't embrace. Last year, we recommended a slight increase in the mill levy. That, again, was not endorsed by the council. So we let the numbers float. By the time we got through the second draft, your general fund reserves were down to $1.2 million.
According to the city, the minimum reserve level should be about $3 million. That low reserve level led to the suggested mill rate increase. Bergeron suggests that the city look into increasing employee contributions to health insurance, a continually rising expense. He says the tax burden on local residents is too high.
You know, I certainly feel that the city should provide health insurance and all the things that it does, but I think that some of those costs need to be borne by the people that work here rather than the ratepayers.
Sievertson says he doesn't oppose raising property tax rates, but the council still should look for cuts wherever possible.
A mill rate is really an investment in our community, and if we're going to continue to improve and build on our community, such as the fire station or library, we have to have a funding source to pay for that. But I do think that we have to be responsible and look this budget through very detailed and see if there's any cost savings that we can come up with.
The council also decided, again in a split vote, to repeal the city's boat tax. Voting no on that issue were West, Olson, and Harris. In Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
Pacific halibut stocks show some signs of responding to several years of cuts to the commercial catch. That's the good news, according to scientists with the International Pacific Halibut Commission. The bad news is more cuts could be coming for next year. The IPHC met in Seattle last week and heard reports on halibut fisheries in the U.S. and Canada and an assessment of halibut numbers in the Pacific. Joe Vicknicki reports.
The IPHC recommends annual catch limits for halibut fishing fleets in the western U.S., Alaska, and British Columbia. Declining halibut stocks have meant big reductions in the commercial catch.
And what this is indicating to me is that the scientific results, whether based on models or data, have all been showing a strong decline in the stock over the last decade, and that management's responded very closely to that information.
That's Ian Stewart, an IPHC scientist who outlined historical catch levels and stock estimates at the Commission's interim meeting in November. Scientists have been concerned that past estimates of halibut numbers and corresponding harvest rates have been set too high. That, they say, contributed to the declines. Stewart described a graph that noted some good news about stock numbers this year.
The stock was declining under a period when we think, in retrospect, the harvest rate was above the target. And that, given that if we've selected a target that's quite reasonable, that's what we would expect to happen when we harvest in excess of the target, that the stock would decline. What's important and what's cause for optimism here is that we see the 2012 point and backing up to 2011 that's connected to it and the point above it, we see that as that harvest rate has been brought down toward the target, the decline in the stock has actually slowed and even reversed slightly in 2012. So again, that's good news.
Despite that good news, commercial catch levels in many of the areas may not be headed upward anytime soon. Stewart told the commission that scientists are still not seeing large numbers of young fish growing to commercial catch size. Because of the commission's concerns over the uncertainty of halibut stock assessments, the staff this year changed the way it presents its catch recommendations. Instead of proposing single numbers for catch levels in each area, Stewart outlined a chart that showed a range of coastwide harvest options. One option, highlighted by a blue line, would allow a total commercial catch of 22.7 million pounds. That would be a 33% reduction overall.
That is essentially what the catch advice would have been in previous years. This year, we're going to present you with more information, both in terms of relative risk probabilities associated with that and other levels, as well as the risk associated with different management alternatives.
Under that blue line option, Southeast Area 2C would be going up by about 500,000 pounds. Other areas like 3A and the Central Gulf of Alaska would see a drop of more than 2.5 million pounds under that scenario. But that's just one possibility. As part of the new format this year, staffers offered alternatives that ranged from no fishing coastwide to much higher harvest rates, which could lead to bigger reductions in future years. Commission Chair Michael Pearson of Canada asked for some clarification from IPHC Director Bruce Lehman.
It's not staff advice, the blue line. It's the blue line is a reference to, in previous years, what would have been staff advice. Now we're looking at a table which is basically, here are the various options we have to look at as commissioners, including what would have been in previous years as staff advice. But I think it'd be fair to say, Bruce, it's not as if the staff is saying to us, our view is you must choose, not must choose, that you should be choosing the blue line. Is that correct to say, Ian and Bruce?
I think the best statement you made, Mr. Chairman, was that this represents simply the application of the current harvest policy to the results of the 2012 assessment.
Pearson also noted the need for a better explanation of why additional catch reductions are needed in light of some of the positive data.
So on the one hand, that kind of information is saying things look like they're getting better. But on the other hand, and people will nonetheless, regardless, focus on the blue lines, saying they're still talking about a possible reduction of 40% in the catch. So I think there's going to be some need for people to have a better understanding of how to reconcile what seems to be contradictory information. I know you've tried to do that, but I suspect there may be need to further think that through this so people fully understand.
Pearson also asked for more information about the various alternatives and what they could mean for catch levels in each of the regulatory areas. That information could help the commissioners make their decision on the commercial halibut catch during the IPHC annual meeting in late January in Victoria, British Columbia. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
Alaska's chronic shortage of substance abuse detoxification services recently improved when one of four residential detox centers in the state reopened. KNBA's Jacqueline Estes has more.
The Ernie Turner Center in Anchorage closed its detox program in late July when it learned it didn't comply with a 2009 advisory from the State Board of Nursing clarifying what services licensed practical nurses, or LPNs, can provide. Rebecca Ling is Director of Recovery Services at Cook Inlet Tribal Council, which manages the Ernie Turner Center.
We were able to get some clarification from the nursing board on staffing patterns, and we hired two nurses to do admits during the daytime, and our LPNs work at night, so we're in compliance.
And how much extra is this costing?
We believe the additional staffing patterns are going to cost approximately $180,000 more per year.
And where are you getting that money from?
We're working with the state to try to get additional fundings for those charges.
The Ernie Turner Center has 12 beds for detox services, which together with beds at other programs adds up to 38 in Alaska. Ling says they have one vacancy now and a waiting list of 12, which she expects to grow as word spreads they've reopened their detox services. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
The annual concert put on by a women's prison string orchestra in Anchorage will take on special meaning this year. There's two special milestones this Saturday for two founding members of the Highland Mountain Women's Correctional Facility Orchestra. Violinist Sarah Jane Kaufman is performing in her ninth concert, but her first as a parolee. She served her sentence for murder and was paroled in February. But she continues to go back to the prison every Saturday to practice. She says some might find it weird she goes back, but she says there's a lot of people she knows and loves at the prison. Dana Hilbisch will be playing in her final concert. The cellist convicted of first-degree murder has made parole and will be out of prison next month. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. And here's a look at Sitka Zone weather. Today, snow changing to rain in the afternoon along South Baranof. Snow accumulation to 2 inches, highs around 33, east wind 5 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, snow mixed with rain late, snow accumulation around 2 inches, lows 27 to 32, east wind 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tuesday will be mostly cloudy, chance of rain and snow, highs around 35, east wind 5 to 15 miles per hour. And Wednesday, rain is likely with highs around 39, southeast wind 5 to 15 miles per hour. Thursday, rain likely, highs around 39. You're listening to KCAW in Sitka.